Hey, I thought I heard you say you play guitar.
Yeah, I play guitar.
Oh, well, Hilton knows that I'm looking for a new guitarist.
Why, you want to try out?
Before you add one, you ought to learn to play it yourself.
Hey, man, excuse me, what did you say?
I said your bass player can't sing, and you come in on the wrong beat.
I come in on the wrong beat?
Yeah, that's right. You should kick it, not step on it.
Who are you, buddy, Segovia? Who the hell do you think you are coming down here telling me how to play with my band?
Somebody should.
Hey, Rick, let him play. A man's music speaks louder than his words. Let's see what you got.
Hey, man, be my guest. Be my guest. This should be funny. This should be completely hilarious.
From Buffalo, New York, the cover band capital of North America, it's the Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast.
Welcome to the Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast, where we talk about the good, the bad, and the funny of being a DIY musician in the 716. I'm Ryan Gurnett.
I'm Dennis Reed Jr.
And welcome to the show.
So we're trying to get these out every 2 weeks, but it hasn't been possible every week. This one's coming out a little bit late. We appreciate everybody's patience.
As with music, when you make a podcast, the struggle is real.
Exactly. And there things come up, life intervenes, and we don't get paid that much for this. Like, I heard we barely make as much as Think So Joe.
Well, you only make 25% of what I make, because this
right.
podcast is my idea. So your percentage of nothing is quite a bit smaller than my percentage of nothing.
No, we're supposed to pretend that we make money, so then Think So Joe listens, and then he's like, those guys get a salary.
Oh, I mean, we get like $1,000 a podcast.
Yeah, and I'm sure Joe gets at least $1,500.
Oh, absolutely. Though, he forgot my name on his podcast.
I heard about that. Well, I saw that online. He remembered my name, though.
I haven't listened to the podcast yet, but I got a message saying he forgot my name and he apologized.
Now you have to listen just to see how egregious
I just want to listen so I can scream along.
In
while
agony?
He's doing it, yeah. It's Gurnett! It's Gurnett! Come on!
That's right. It's French for Little War.
It's just like watching a Bills game where I know I'm going to be yelling at the TV. Mm-hmm. I know I'm going to yell at the TV, and it's not going to... And it's not going to do anything. It's not going to change any impact, but I still want to yell at the TV.
Yeah, well, if it makes you feel better, it's, you know.
Makes me kind of warm and fuzzy. So, I was at Mohawk Place last night, and
oh, cool.
I saw a great new wave show, I guess I'd call it. It was The Tins, Her Majesty, Heroic Enthusiasts, and, who was the first band? It's probably better that I don't remember their name.
Was it Think So Joe?
There's something I've just thought, and I want to talk to you about this, Dennis.
Sure.
It is the overuse of the rock falsetto voice.
What are you talking about?
I think when the Darkness did it for
yeah.
a thing called Love,
mm-hmm.
that was actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
It caught people off guard.
Right.
Coheed and Cambria can still pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, they've been, yeah, they've
there's
been
this new Bon Iver-inspired nonsense.
Oh.
What do you think of Bon Iver?
Bon Iver, you know, the atmospherics are fine. I don't personally enjoy Bon Iver, but for like a soundtrack when like people are about to hump in a movie for the first time, a
okay.
little Bon Iver faded about 33% in the background, it's okay. Right? He's kind of, oh.
He sounds like a warbly cat dying.
And there's like 15 of, like usually he layers himself like 15 of them in and it's all like orchestral. Right? Is that what I'm thinking of?
I haven't listened to a ton of Bon Iver because
yeah.
I think he's just awful. The stuff I've listened to has actually been really sparse.
But okay. I thought there was like a lot of like reverby vocals kind of like flowing in and out though. It is like sparse though, like in the terms of like just like a single guitar or a single, instrument or something. But yeah, so you're not a fan.
The opening band had a singer, and he had this really cool voice. It reminded me of kind of had that throwback feel like Foster the People has, where it's kind of like sounds like has a 60s feel, and he kind of sounded, I don't know if you're familiar with Band of Horses.
No.
Kind of sounded like the vocalist for that band, too, and it was great. But then all of a sudden, it's sing up here!
Yeah.
And like, you couldn't understand any of the words.
Oh, that's not
he
cool.
was clearly out of tune for a lot of it. And like, it just ended up being like watching this really cool band with this really neat sound play, and just this guy, like 50% of the gig singing in just this awful, terrible voice.
Oh yeah, no, that's got to be used with great care, that falsetto. I mean, it's, unless you really land on the note too, like, you know, we know that higher notes are more easily recognized as being off pitch when they are off pitch, and yeah, you're taking your life in your own hands if you're not really a master. Once in a while, I'll hazard a falsetto note once in a great while for the later of the time.
Exactly, there, like a note here or there is fine. But like, if this guy would have just taken all of his falsetto and put it down an octave, I'd be sitting here telling you how great they are, and I would probably remember their name.
You'd probably know who they were, yeah, instead of trying to subconsciously delete it from your memory.
But I did see some great bands. I saw Heroic Enthusiasts, who are a band from Rochester. And it's older guys playing, I mean, it's 90s. It's 80s new wave. It's like,
Where was the show at again?
I was at Mohawk Place.
At Mohawk, okay.
And it sounded like it was Echo and the Bunnymen, like right onto that. And usually, if I think a band sounds too much like another band, I'll kind of take away points. But you don't see people making original music like this anymore, so it was actually really cool to see. And I would definitely recommend them the next time they're in town. And then Her Majesty from New York City was the third band on. And
which I'm imagining is a Beatles reference.
No, it is not. If you check their bio, it's a reference. I can't tell you what it is. It's a reference.
Let me keep imagining that.
I mean, will it make you more likely to listen to them?
Totally.
Oh, then it's absolutely a Beatles reference. Everyone out there, if you're a Beatles fan and you think that's a Beatles reference.
Are they actually walking across the road, too, on their album cover with one of them?
I'm sorry.
Shoeless? No.
No.
Like short for like Her Majesty's Satanic?
It's
name of a ship or something.
I think it's more like having to do with like the Queen of England actually. Right. Like, it's a statement from a book or.
It's from the Beatles. They think they're being clever, but
the problem with finding their videos online is you type in Her Majesty and all that comes up is covers of the Beatles.
Yeah, all kinds
song.
Of cool shit comes up instead. Yeah, it's too bad.
But
they sound awesome.
Yeah. Check them out if you can get a chance. It's, you know, there's new wave in there. I heard everything. I heard Peter Gabriel. I heard Bowie. I heard The Cure. You know, I heard some 90s rock influences in there. It kind of came from all directions, and it was this really cool sound where it was something unique that I haven't heard before, but it almost felt familiar from the influences it was pulling from.
Right.
And that made it like really stand out for me. The backing vocals were cool. The guitar player, he could shred.
Yeah.
Like, I just remember watching it, and it's like, he's one of those guys you look at and you're like, if I was going to start a band, him.
Wow.
Like, that's the guy I want. Mm-hmm. Just the way he was going all over the guitar was great. The singer has this really, he's a real, I met him, his name's Johnny, he's a super nice guy, and his onstage persona is kind of like this creepy, kind of, almost gothic kind of character with these haunting vocals, but then in between sets, he just talks like himself, and it's just like him being a nice guy from New York,
right.
So it's cool having that, like, back and forth, and
I
know I would just, you know, this was their third time coming to Buffalo. I'm sure they'll be back again. They're making great music. Check out Her Majesty. Yes.
Yeah. Big Beatles fans, Her Majesty. Well, I actually just saw some new music, too. Not as cool as the music you saw, but I came back from San Francisco. I was there for a work trip for a few days, and I'm happy to report that San Francisco, at least, you know, the touristy parts that I was in, is just as plagued with cover band nonsense as Buffalo is. As soon as I got off the BART, the Bay Area Rapid Transit, like their metro, got up to the street level, like right down in like Union Square area and like Market Street. And the first thing I hear is just some like Jimmy Buffett, like some guy playing like Jimmy Buffett to like a background track. And I'm just like, what is happening here? And there was like a bunch of parrot heads like standing around watching him. So that was there. And then I also saw like an impromptu And in, like just like a few feet away from this, there was like a rave going on, which was actually pretty awesome. There was a couple performers. I don't know what they were like. I'm so like out of popular music. Like it was totally like pop. Like there was like three black dudes, three black girls, some other people. There was balloons. It was silver. There was a lot of light. I think it was a song. There was like a lot of like, there was like a drum machine going. I think that there was a musical performance buried in there somewhere. The people were dancing, but actually a lot of people like kind of weren't by it. It was actually funny. I was listening to like people's conversations and they were like, what is this again? Like it had all the spectacle, but like a lot of people were talking to each other like, I don't know this artist, but if you just sort of like blurred your eyes, it looked like, you know, some sort of like Justin Bieber on like, you know, on like Good Morning America or something,
that sounds
you know?
So peculiar.
It was weird. It was just like right in the middle of the street, and it seemed like everybody was kind of like taken by surprise. But I saw this one great guy down at the Fisherman's Wharf a couple days later. As a big dude, he was a solo drummer basically, except he had like a whole PA system dragged out with him on Fisherman's Wharf. So he had like, you know, full on drum set, acoustic drum set. Like it wasn't like a guy playing like the, you know, the buckets or anything. And then he had a wireless microphone, and he had a whole PA system, and he had like these songs queued up where it was, you know, like if he did like Wonderful Tonight. I think he also did some Jimmy Buffett.
So drumming karaoke, basically?
So he was like singing and drumming karaoke. And at first I'm kind of like, you know, like, all right, that's, you know, that's okay. But then I started to hear like some drum fills, and at first I heard a Rototom fill, and I noticed his sticks weren't playing the Rototom because I'm studying him like a hawk, of course, like all the other like tourists are like whatever. I'm like, what's he up to? And yeah, so at first I hear like a do, and you know, meanwhile his like just right hand is still going on the hi hat. So I'm like, okay, Rototoms, we'll give you the Rototoms. But then I started hearing crashes come in that were like on tape, and he wasn't playing the crashes. I'm just like, fuck, this guy's bullshit. But he, I think he had like a little like a plant in the audience. This is maybe a good idea for our shows.
Cool.
So I'm there and yeah, there's a couple of people. So he's totally working the crowd. It's just like this touristy spot where there's a couple park benches. Like I said, it's right on Fisherman's Wharf. And I see this woman like dancing rather energetically to his music, and I thought, really, is anybody like into this? And you know, I look closer, and you know, she looked a little bit weathered, you know, she looked like she slept out of doors maybe a few times, and she had like a cigarette burning like in her hand as she was dancing, and she had like this big hat on, like this kind of, you know, kind of like a nice dress, but she was way into it, you know. And she was kind of getting the rest of the crowd into it, you know. She's kind of like looking at people and getting them up, but then when the wave of tourists like subsided, she like just sat down on the park bench, and then like they were kind of having like a conversation, like her and this drummer. So I think they were kind of like in cahoots, like,
oh yeah, she's a sleeper cell.
You know, yeah, yeah,
me.
she's well, she's like a plant. So maybe we should do that for one of our shows, is get somebody to just like,
I'd be like,
oh, this is great, and like sing along with all the words.
When I saw the Heroic Enthusiast, I went to the bathroom, and then I came back, and my wife's like, oh, you should be happy you didn't miss this. And there's these two beautiful women dancing. And I'm like, huh. I'm like, okay, I got two shows now. And about 10 minutes in, I'm like, I should get out there and dance with them. Even though that's being ironic, it's like, I kind of want to just get out there and boogie now. And then I later found out that they were wives/girlfriends
right.
of the Heroic Enthusiast.
Yeah. That's always a danger. And then you always, you know, don't you kind of, to use your takeaway points metaphor, you always kind of just like, well, of course, it's the girlfriend. They're going to dance. But to have somebody in, like, a plant in the audience that just seemed like a random, I mean, maybe a 56-year-old homeless woman wouldn't be, a smoking homeless woman wouldn't be our first choice, but something along those lines. If anybody's interested in that sort of position, it doesn't pay anything, but go ahead and tweet at us.
We should do some research to find someone, and by research, I mean strip clubs.
Sure. go deep undercover.
Look for some employment.
Well, it's just an idea. I mean, it was like an old school vaudeville act. Like it was like, you know, it reminded me of like, you know, like Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney in the Say 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 video. Like one of them's like out there, like the smooth talker, and then like all of a sudden somebody from the crowd comes up and goes, "I'm puny. I'll try this potion." You know, it was that sort of situation. But the woman started dancing, and she did get people worked up.
And you know, even more egregious than the drummer playing with Rototoms being piped through the speakers, I wish I knew their name. I have relatives who got married locally, and they went to Toronto to check out the cover band. Like, this was a big deal kind of cover band they checked out. And they played the wedding, and the playlist was just bad for a wedding, generally. But I'm a musician. I don't dance much anymore. So mm-hmm. I'm watching the musicians, and they're playing, and it sounds fine. And then all of a sudden, the bass player is not playing, but bass music is coming out.
Uh-oh.
And they were clearly playing to a track. The tracks were even,
whoa,
like, cross-fading. So, like, while one track faded out, another yeah. track faded in. To me, it, like we can say what we want about cover bands.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason not to like them when you're an sure. original musician, but to be a cover band who needs a backing track,
yeah, yeah.
like just go find something else to do. Like that's such a lack of musicianship for me that it just wow. it makes me want to scream. Like as soon as I saw that,
yeah, were these guys selling their own CDs? Like the guy in San Francisco I saw?
No. They were like strict wedding band. Like they weren't selling anything.
This guy was selling CDs for $5, and you know they had like Wonderful Tonight and like cover songs on them. Like, I think Caribbean Queen was in there
dude,
at one point.
You're so selling him out. He's going to get some copyright infringement stuff.
Listen.
Eric
that's
Clapton
bad.
Is clearly listening to us right now.
That's what he...
And he's going to... Eric Clapton's still alive, right?
Well, I can't... Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so Eric Clapton's going to go down to San Francisco, and he's...
Going to bust this guy's whole thing.
Some shit's going to go down.
I'm going to blow up his spot. Well, that's what he gets.
Since 2010, Elizabeth and I have been touring around the United States, trying to make a name for ourselves as the band Pocket Vinyl. We have no managers, no booking agents, no press people, no drivers, no merch person, no one outside the two of us. It is without a doubt the hardest job I've ever had. We've had many great adventures and many horrible ones. Don't get me wrong, it's been amazing, but touring can destroy you emotionally if you're not careful. People often ask us why we keep doing it, and how. It's a hard thing to answer, and I'm not so sure I even know what the answer is. But instead of trying to tell you, we thought we'd try to show you. For one entire year, we filmed everything we could about our lives on the road and interviewed countless musicians we met along the way, all trying to make a living playing music. My name is Eric Stevenson, and this is what the life of a small independent musician looks like.
Struggly episode today.
Yeah, so our podcast here in general is all about the humiliations and exhilarations of being a local musician. And basically, somebody went and made a documentary movie version of what we do here.
I think is Dunn Went actually appropriate English?
Dunn Gone Went? I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
Okay.
This is kind of advanced.
Because if not, that might be the poorest example of grammar I've ever heard you use.
Well,
you're always very meticulous.
I was code switching, though. You know, I was doing sort of a down homey punning on that sort of thing.
But
somebody done plumb and went. You know.
Even if you're being ironic, that's still like the greatest misuse of English I've ever heard
sure.
from you, and it makes me happy. Dennis usually has about 3 to 5 words every episode that I don't understand. So,
but yeah, so somebody made a documentary version of basically what we do here.
It's a duo called Pocket Vinyl, and Eric plays piano and sings. He sounds a lot like Ben Fold.
Is it Eric? Oh, it is Eric.
Yeah. It is Eric. And his wife, Elizabeth?
I think it's his girlfriend.
Girlfriend?
I'm pretty sure.
Eric and Elizabeth, regardless mm-hmm. of relationship, she paints. And
right.
kind of one of the ways they really generate money as they're on tour, since, you know, playing gigs is hard, is that they auction off the paintings she paints at the end of the shows.
Right.
So, they played Sugar City on September 7th, and I went, and,
yep.
oh, there were like 10 people there. Like yeah. I keep seeing more and more great shows locally. Mm-hmm. And just people aren't coming to. People need to get out of their houses and see them.
Yeah.
Cause...
Turn off this podcast right now and get to Sugar City.
No. Play the podcast in the car while you're getting to Sugar City.
Yeah, put it on your smartphone.
So they did a half-hour performance.
Mm-hmm.
It was six songs, and Elizabeth painted this beautiful, it was like a purple background with stars and a goat smoking something.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And
the occasion was that they were, it was like a movie thing too, right?
Yes, they're touring in support of their movie, Drive, Play, Sleep, which is going to be available digitally and on DVD starting November 7th.
Okay.
For me, I've told like all my friends what being on tour is like.
Mm-hmm.
But you really can't, it's one of those things where until you see it happen, until you participate in it, you don't really understand. Like, you just don't know how sleazy or cheap or crude it can be. Or even, like, the highlights, like, the good
mm-hmm.
stuff. Like you know, you end up playing a show at a VFW and, like, 75 random people show up.
Right.
Like, this is amazing. So, Drive, Play, Sleep does a really good job of kind of really showing examples of how all this works. It follows 1 year in their life. Being a touring band, they interview other musicians, you know, they show how they sleep, where they play, you know, who makes them breakfast, all sorts of the little things you really don't think about when you see a band on tour. And, you know, you really don't know the struggle about even just things like getting from like point A to point B sometimes can be hard between, you know, they talk about car troubles a lot.
Yeah,
in the film.
Spoiler alert, they do have some car troubles. So let's take a listen to the opening scene here then of Drive Play Sleep by Pocket Vinyl on the Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast.
We've just had like the worst week of shows, and I don't know what else to do. I'm trying to book our tour for September and October, and it's about half filled, but I still have a bunch of dates to go, and I'm just worried I won't be able to book them. And even if we do book them, then what? Then we go on another tour, and it's just this fear that we'll never, just 10 years from now, we'll never be any step closer to where we are right now. I don't even know what success looks like if it's a record deal or just being able to play to more people, feeling like we're building this thing. I feel like it's just, like, right to where, like, my heart is, like, in my chest. It just feels like it's just constricting, and it's...
You can tell right from that opening scene that this isn't going to be, like, a superficial, the road is a party kind of documentary. They really seem... you know, to try to dig a little bit deeper about, to get answers about, like, why we keep doing this thing that a lot of times does, you know, feel like bullshit and there's not a lot of reward to it, but, like, you know, what keeps driving you out there?
Yeah, I feel like any musician who's ever toured has had those thoughts at some point.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of practical advice in this movie, too, like, not only, like, just getting experience being there, but they actually do a pretty good job of... just helping you if you are considering going out and self-booking your tour, if you want to mount your own tour. At one point, Eric says, being a musician is basically a desk job. And we see him booking and planning the tour. And he uses something, I don't know if you guys know about this. I'd never heard of it. I haven't checked it out myself, but he mentions IndieOnTheMove.com. And they're not like a sponsor or anything, but it seems like a cool resource. They had the gentleman who's the proprietor of it on there. He talked about why he started the website and stuff. But yeah, there's also in the Drive Play Sleep documentary, Eric talks a lot about the importance of the merch table, which is something I kind of never realized the opportunity that the merch table presented for a local band. I was always kind of like, oh, that's like money, you know, grubbing, like they're just trying to, you know, milk every penny out of them. But he makes the sound point that, you know, it's more about another way for people to be able to interact with you and to learn about, like, who you are. And yeah, and in the documentary there's a lot of fun moments too. We'll take a look at another one here, Ryan, if you want to cue it up. It's at 43:52, and at one point in the movie they give us a tour of a lousy hotel room that they're in.
A house in we paid $47 for this hotel room.
Let's see all the things that make this worth that $47.
Look at all these stains. What are they? Shampoo? Soap? Blood? No one knows.
This tile floor works great in some sort of school.
The towels are nice and 50 grade sandpaper.
There's a dog running up and down the hallway barking at like 6 in the morning.
Those are holes.
Maybe calls from cigarettes? I don't know.
I heard a baby crying and I heard someone yelling at the baby.
We assume they're just stains not made after the sheets were put on the bed.
There was definitely like cigarette smoke smell in the mattress. Picture's nice. Let's look out the window. Oh, what's that? A hole in the window? Well, that just makes me feel all kinds of safe.
I think it's safe to say that this was worth every single penny of that $47. 100%.
Two of my last paintings almost paid for this.
We also see how they handle those gigs that we've all had, where they're being basically ignored by everybody. And at a bar in New Orleans, one particular scene that actually I did want to play as well, there's literally a parade going by outside as they're playing, and nobody pays attention to them playing. And Eric has some pretty inspired riffing on the microphone that he does.
This next one, Bruce Springsteen, the boss himself, tweeted about. This next song is one that Barack Obama said was his number two favorite song of 2015. Woo! Free beer! Alright, let's continue on.
Alright. About to get started. And Trevor's here. But a few people beyond Trevor. Thanks for the encouragement, Trevor.
That shot of them talking to Trevor right there.
Yeah.
That so reminds me of an empty Tudor lounge.
Yeah, it's got a similar layout.
Yeah.
A similar desperation.
Similar emptiness.
If you do it for a holiday.
Oh, yeah.
Take some time to celebrate.
Come on, let's celebrate.
Just one day out of life.
Policy.
It would be so nice. Everybody spread the word. I live in my sister's basement.
He just said it's heartbroken. Why would he even think about coming back to work?
I don't know.
Today we are here with Eric and Elizabeth from Pocket Vinyl. How are you guys doing today?
Great.
Doing awesome.
Awesome. So typically, like I said, we usually do Buffalo bands, but I saw you guys were coming to town, and one of the things that you're touring with is a kind of a touring documentary of what it's like for you guys. So, you know, from where I sit, that kind of makes me think that you guys are kind of experts on the subject.
We've been touring a lot.
We just really, yeah. I mean, I don't know. We just press play on a video camera, and then a movie happened. That's ultimately what, you know, we're not experts as much as. Although I will say, I grew up.
Yeah, like, he grew up pretty close.
Hour and a half south of
here. Oh, okay.
So Western New York is, we're sort of a Western New York band.
Yeah.
Even though we're not, I don't know. We always play, like, a couple times a year coming through, so.
Cool.
I don't know if it's just to try to make sure we have the right credentials.
No, and I want to say I checked out your music a few days ago, and we have a lot of bands on, and I don't necessarily personally go out and endorse everything we have, but I listened to your most recent album on Spotify, Tin.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Thank you.
Like, I love it. For whomever is listening, like, go and check it out on Spotify. At least give it like a one-time listen through. It was. Kind of has kind of a haunting, moody, atmospheric kind of feel to it, and I thought that was just really cool and very different. So I was really really blown away, and I'm super excited to see you guys a little later tonight.
Thanks.
And,
oh, you're coming.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay. All right. We never assume people.
I write for the same website that this podcast is on, and I'm actually going to be reviewing the concert and the movie.
Oh, great.
Ooh, it'll be
so,
oh, boy.
So I already really like you guys. So
oh, thanks.
Good start.
Great.
So, Dennis, do you have any questions you want to start with?
Yeah. So the background, you know, you're in a group called Pocket Vinyl, and you grew up in was it Colden? Is that what you're saying?
Houghton.
Houghton. Oh, what is Houghton?
It's the only way you would have heard of it is Houghton College,
okay.
Which we're both alumni of too. That's,
oh.
That's where we met.
Okay.
Yeah, but I grew up there.
Okay.
Elizabeth grew up in a far more interesting place.
Oh, right. I grew up in Northern Canada.
Okay.
Oh, that is way more interesting.
No, but like Northern Canada.
Like Caribou, Canada?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I have on my shoulder.
there it is.
There is a caribou.
Okay.
Well, like, it's, I mean, your birthday, you just had your birthday August 26th.
Yeah, and most birthdays it would snow.
Oh, yeah.
That's far north.
You're
Canada.
Yeah.
Are you pulling my leg right now? Is this a joke you pull on Americans all the time? Because I'll believe you. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's so remote. It would take from here, it would take like 3 days of travel.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's no road. You have to take a train
sure.
for like 12 hours. Up. It's middle
or
of nowhere. Or a plane, yeah.
Oh, sounds like it could be a beautiful country, though.
It's very beautiful.
Very quiet.
It actually, it looks like old spaghetti western movies, weirdly. Even
yeah.
it's like when there's no snow.
Right, because there's like hardly any trees. So it's very desert looking. It's pretty cool.
Nice. So tell us about this movie, because Ryan started saying the subject matter is very closely allied to what we talk about in the Start Goes Real podcast. We could talk about DIY musicians, people who, you know, don't necessarily have big record deals and don't have big limousines, but we're doing it for the love of it. I mean, I saw you guys pulled up in a limousine today, but we'll still. So who is it? It follows your tour adventures?
I would say that we are the example that is shown in the documentary, but we interview, 30 to 40 other musicians in the documentary,
more.
And they all tell their experiences while we show in the film our example of their experience. So if they're talking about sleeping in the car, it cuts to, here's Eric and Elizabeth from Pocket Vinyl sleeping in the car, and here's how we do it. And then we'll maybe get some footage of another friend's car and their sleeping setup.
Mm-hmm.
Like stuff like that. So it's just we try to not make it Pocket Vinyl the movie.
Yeah, I want to stress that.
Yeah.
It is not Pocket Vinyl the movie.
We really just wanted to be able to show what it looks like for a touring band that nobody knows about.
Right.
You know, we spend our lives doing this, and a lot of people we know spend their lives doing this, and most people who don't tour don't know what that looks like. So we just wanted to have an easy thing that we could show people. Like, here, Mom and Dad, this is what we do all the time.
Right. How long did you work on it for? How long did you collect material?
A full year.
A full, 1 year. January 1st to December 31st.
And that's fantastic.
Was
that
premeditated, or did it just kind of end up that way?
Yeah, actually, just 2 years ago,
exactly.
We decided, like in September 2 years ago, we decided to do it. So we got ready, got everything set, booked a whole bunch of tours for one solid year, and then just went on the road. And
138 shows total in 1 year. Yeah.
These are troopers.
It's
And now we're gonna be at Sugar City tonight, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Me too. But are they equipped for IMAX? So this is gonna be a 3D experience.
They,
is what I'm hoping for.
So we did film the thing with a home 3D video thing. No, it I don't know exactly what they have. I just know they have a screen and
a projector?
Yes,
okay.
I'm pretty sure. They did the DVD, I believe.
Is that where we did our pictures? Was that Sugar City? Or am I thinking of somewhere else?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's like a DIY art space, like volunteer run.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a bar.
I've heard good things, but I haven't been there
yet.
We
played there once before. It was great.
A couple months ago?
Yeah, in the spring. Yeah. I really love the place. And places like that are really cool because it's all... Usually you can plug in... to like, I don't know, there's usually communities revolving around it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And while there's not necessarily what you would call a built-in crowd, but there's still like word would get out. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
right.
I'm hoping, I don't know, word will get
out. Yeah, it's not the kind of place you walk up to sort of casually. I mean, it's a little bit marooned, but there is a community around it. I went to a zine fest there about 6 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of folks there. And then I went to see Jeffrey Lewis perform there.
Oh, really?
A few weeks ago as well. And a lot of the same faces, you know.
Yeah.
So people do come out for stuff and word gets out. So hopefully you guys will have a great turnout tonight.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, we'll see. There was a little It was like there's a little confusion with start time that we had to change a little bit, but I think we're good now. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So I know when to get there. What is the start time?
So 7:30, we're doing a short set of like a half hour set where she's doing the painting and oh, we should probably.
I was yeah no that, I'll, yeah. I'm gonna ask.
Well, and then that and then the movie starts at 8:00.
Oh, okay, perfect.
Yeah. Doors are at 6:00 though, so.
All right.
Time before then.
Yeah.
So yeah, that kind of leads to my next question. So you is it Elizabeth's artwork that mm-hmm. you sell? How did kind of that start being incorporated with the band, or was that something you always kind of?
I mean, as an art major, I've always done art. Mm-hmm. As an art major in college, there were a few instances in college where I was able to do some live stuff for like different events. And then when we got together and he was booking his first tour. I just suggested, you know, I could come. I don't play any instruments, but I could come along and I could do live painting, and we could
really
see how it
liked
works.
Each other too. We wanted to hang out.
Yeah. So yeah, that's how it started. And the first tour was just like learning experience and seeing how it would go. And ever since then, it's been really great.
Any kind of weird stories about the way people, because that's different, oh. how people react to something like that.
Not only that, but I think, I don't know if it's weirder for people to see an artist in a venue or a woman in a venue. Seriously, I get a lot of people coming up to me and just vomiting out whatever's on their mind.
Well, when you say people, you mean straight white men.
they just come up and they just tell me whatever happens to be on their mind, as offensive or rude or disgusting as it might be.
Oh.
They really like to let me know that they have opinions.
There's a scene in the movie about it.
Oh, I mean, fantastic.
Like, what, yeah, list off some of the things that people have told you.
They love to tell me what I should paint. They love to tell me how I should paint. They love to tell me that I need to change everything that I'm doing. They love to ask me why I bother. They love to just, to be honest, I don't know if this is true or not, but I think that a lot of them have an issue with someone being in a position that's above, like even if it's just physically above them on a stage.
Yeah.
And they just
authority.
Are
authority.
Of authority. Yeah. And they're just in some way or another trying to tear me down.
Oh, no.
Now, this isn't everyone. This is like maybe once or twice a tour.
I would even say it's probably not purposeful. Like, they're not thinking of it consciously. It's just more of like a,
I think they're just very ignorant.
Right.
And they're naive and they don't realize that they're being super mean.
Oh, no. Well, I'm sure far more people enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a plan with the painting? So you paint live while you perform.
Yeah, I just play piano and sing. Just
you play piano and sing. Yeah. And then do you know what you're going to paint beforehand or do you get...
I do plan about 50% of the painting, I think.
Okay.
So I'll have like all my paints set out and ready to go. That way if an idea comes to me in the moment, I can do it right away. You know, because we have today, our entire show will only be 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got to have a whole painting done in 30 minutes. So I've got all my paints out. I've got a basic idea of how I want it to go. And then the rest of it is kind of see how the show goes.
See, I'm actually a bit of an artist myself.
Okay.
I paint and draw. And I would be terrified to get up on stage and be like, what if this one doesn't come out great?
One thing that actually really helps is so that the audience can see my paintings. I have my back to everyone.
Right.
So I'm actually not looking. I can't see how people are reacting. It is, so it doesn't, it's like I get in my own little space. I'm just looking at my painting. I can't see what's going on behind me. And it doesn't, I don't feel nervous about
it. It's still, you're like, flop sweats. These values aren't working.
Well, it's funny because there, you know, sometimes.
Good for you.
Audiences, I'm always, like, I kind of sit. As with like, if I'm, you know, sitting like this, the audience is there or there. I don't like
kind of
like I don't like a face on with the audience.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
On a piano, it feels weird.
To
yeah, I basically try to pretend like my little keyboard is a grand piano. If you think of how someone sits on a grand piano, it's like to the side.
Right.
And we'll have shows sometimes where, you know, people are loud and I'll make jokes or they're, you know, chuckling or something like that. They're, you know, interacting with us. And other times where I can see them like, smiling, and I can tell they're with me, but they're not making any sound. And there have been times where, like, we've gotten off the set, and I'm like, that was a pretty good show. And Elizabeth's like, I thought it was horrible. No one was doing anything.
I'm not hearing people reacting well, so I'm like, oh, I guess everyone's ignoring us. Right. Sometimes I'll start the show, and the room will be empty, and I'll turn around, and they'll be full of people, and I didn't even notice.
Right.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's, that's kind of a funny, just... Yeah, thing that'll happen.
Did you ever try to do a complete movie before this? I noticed on your YouTube page you had a lot of little, like, I think, pocumentaries, you called them.
Yeah.
We do music videos, we do these little, like, no more than like, what, 5-10 minute
yeah.
documentaries about how a tour is going or whatever, but nothing big like this.
One of the things, I mean, I took some video editing classes in college, just like some like 101 stuff, and yeah, we bought a video camera in like 2012. It was the same one we used for this movie, and we just would film stuff on the road, yeah, make little tiny documentaries just about, but you know, they're just small little nuggets of things. And that was, yeah, 2 years ago. I remember we were, I don't know if we were filming one or what, but we were just like talking about it. And honestly, I just didn't know what else like to do in terms of, you know, like trying to get your music out there and stuff. And
right.
I remember just thinking like, well, I sort of know my way around basic editing techniques. And I think I could put like something together. So let's make
a
move.
It really is hard to describe to people who've never toured what it's like. It's so hard. Like, people just don't... You can tell them all the stories and explain that you've been sleeping in the car for 8 nights in a row, and it's still just like, unless you see what it actually looks like, you can't really fathom it.
I've always described it as an avant-garde camping trip.
Yeah.
But most people still don't understand what I mean when I say that.
Yeah, that's kind of vague, too.
Yeah.
It's mostly like... even this podcast, people I'm sure can listen to 100 episodes of people describing what it's like, but at the same time, until, you know, you actually see footage of someone walking into a Walmart bathroom at 2 in the morning trying to brush your teeth and avoiding the eye contact of strangers just being like, this is normal, then it's really hard to convey just exactly what it is. And, you know, we had a small screening last night, and we had some family members there, and just like some aunts and uncles and stuff, and they were just like, oh, I could never do that. Like, some of the, after watching the movie, they're like, oh, I just, some of those things I could never do. And it's funny how just, I don't know, to me, as I've been thinking a lot about just touring and stuff, and like what people, you know, the people who do it, what they feel like it takes to do it, and then people who just don't want, even if they're in bands, they're like, oh, I couldn't do the touring life. And I think to me, I define it as just, you can do it. It all depends on what you're willing to sacrifice.
Yes.
And I guess you could say that about almost any decision.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I had an office job, I would be sacrificing all the time I get to paint.
Or all the time you get to tour.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be a sacrifice, too. But
yeah.
And, I know even some people, like, because of her paintings, if any band's listening, get a painter. We recommend it, because she'll do the paintings. They're about, yeah, you guys, totally,
well,
get one.
I might be busy.
Well, they're, you know, they're 2x2 foot paintings, and we just auction them off to the highest bidder every night. Like, tonight, we're doing a short set. She's going to make one. We'll auction it off. Sometimes, very, very low prices. Other times, like, very, very high prices. You know, better half of $1,000 or more.
Oh, wow.
All depending on who's there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just an income that...
for a touring group, it's
absolutely.
It's indispensable. Yeah. I don't know how we would survive without it.
Makes all the difference.
I mean, $1,000 is like selling like 100 t-shirts at least.
Yeah,
Oh, I mean, there'll be times where we feel like we sell, you know, a ton of merch. Maybe like $200 worth of merch. But then the painting went for like $250. You know, and it's like, But other times it goes for different things, and it's just...
And yeah, that's almost all profit with the painting, because it doesn't cost that much to get, you know, just the amount of paint that's put on it versus a t-shirt. You know, your markup is usually, you're lucky if you get 50% more than you sold it for.
So
do you have distribution for this film in mind at all? Like, where else are we going to be able, like, people hear this podcast who can't catch you, like, live touring with it, where are we going to be able to see it?
We will do an online release. We're kind of looking at, was it beginning of November?
Yeah, see, I hesitate
well,
to
but we don't
say.
Know.
We're not sure.
But we will have an online release, and we'll be able to sell hard copies online as well if people want, you know, the actual hard DVD.
But are you, so then you are, up until then, touring with this?
Yep.
Like, you're doing a Sugar
doing
City tonight?
Yeah. And we have hard copies with us as we're doing the tour.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so if depending on whenever this gets released, if we're still doing screening tours, but, like, before the movie's released, if you come to a screening, you can... go home with a copy too.
Yeah,
if you want.
Awesome.
But yeah.
Now, do you only sell the painting you do that night, or do you have stuff you bring with you that you're also selling?
Typically, I sell the original that I did that night, and then just recently I've started selling prints of past paintings as well. So I've got a huge collection of those. And then on this tour in particular, there's a few. Well, the majority of the shows that we're doing on this tour, we're actually not doing the painting piano part. We're just showing the movie.
Wow.
And so for that reason, I actually brought a handful of originals, just small like paintings and ink drawings that we're selling as well.
Cool.
But usually we don't do that just because we don't have the space for it. You know, we tore in a Camry.
We have
all of our gear in that thing.
I was curious. Like, you see vehicles coming by, and you're like, this is a big one. This might be there. Yeah. There's lots of art stuff in it.
We took the back seats out of our Camry, and we slide the piano in through the trunk, and everything else is like a Tetris puzzle to get everything.
Oh, yeah. You become an expert in packing very quickly when you go on tour.
Definitely. I feel like it's... Like, my mind works in such a way of, like, you could, like, look at the pile next to the car.
Oh, yeah.
You look at the car and just, like...
You're here.
Yeah.
Sizing up objects in every room you walk into. That lamp would fit in that bookcase perfectly.
Yeah.
Everything in this room, I could probably get into 25% of it easily.
So, you had already planned to do this documentary. Was there something specific that happened, like a moment that happened on tour that made you decide to do the documentary? You know, is there something that was, or a conversation you had with someone that said, you know, this is it, we need to, like, document this?
I think, if I can, I don't know, do you? I mean, basically, we just like doing stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, we decided.
Yeah, always ahead to the next project, I guess.
Yeah, that seems most... Really, people I admire, whether it's comic artists, musicians, anything. I think the Mountain Goats are a good example of a musician who does this. Is they're always just releasing albums and coming out with something else within a year or two.
Well, even
and I'm just looking forward to the next project.
The albums that you've been releasing. So, like, our last album, Tin, that you said that you listened to?
Yeah.
Most of his music doesn't sound like that. Like, Tin is soft, contemplative, kind of... that kind of music, like just softer stuff. And I don't know if you can tell, he's kind of a loud person. Most of his other songs are just yelling and like
lots of
like,
raging,
kind of like a lot of piano punk type,
yeah,
stuff.
Like just very loud, like slamming on the, we call it piano slam rock. It's just louder stuff. And so like, what was it, 3 albums of that, and then for the 4th album is like, what can we do that's interesting, what can we do that's new?
Mm-hmm.
And so he tried writing this album of all soft songs. And so then, well, and before that, you did an entire album all about death from a non-depressing point of view.
Yeah, so non-depressing, like, songs about death.
Like, let's look at what happens in death. Let's look at what happens after. Let's look at how people approach death. And so it's a lot of these just, like, give yourself a goal. Give yourself, a barrier to work within.
Yeah, some
and
parameters.
See how far you can stretch within that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I guess that's why the movie is like, hey, here's a new thing that we could try. Let's see how this goes.
Right. Well, that's another thing, too, is, you know, when you release, like, your first album, you're like, oh, I hope, you know, like, people find it online, and it spreads around, and friends want to spread. And, you know, maybe you get a little bit of that. And you know, you're going, and you're touring, and then you release a second album, and you're like, maybe this one, we'll release this song as, like, a single, which just means, like, put it on YouTube first or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, then you have that, and... And then that, you know, maybe the people who like you, but it doesn't, you know, explode into some viral hit. And for the 3rd album, I remember being like, I kept hoping that, like, oh, we'll have this, like, breakaway success thing, like, some, you know, one of our songs or something. And that, the reality is, that just doesn't happen that often to anybody.
Right, and you gotta keep doing stuff to keep yourself interested.
Yeah.
Like, if you keep shooting for the same goal, and you're not getting there, I mean, are you gonna give up, or are you gonna try something different?
Right.
Right.
And I mean, even artistically, not only on top of pocket vinyl paintings, we've done, she's just done some like galleries and art shows and stuff, you know, like the original paintings we have with us now.
Yeah,
you were saying,
from our shows.
Yeah, from other shows you've done. Elizabeth has a web comic that she started this year called The Touring Test, which is all like kind of semi autobiographical comics about bands on the road and like the funny things.
Oh, fantastic!
That
what's is it? That's just the pocketvinyl.com.
It's at The Touring Test.
Oh,
yeah, it's called The Touring Test, like the Touring Test, you know.
It's a
pun. Oh, yeah.
But it's spelled with the O-U.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, T-O, yeah.
So I post them on Instagram. They're on Facebook, too.
If you just Google it, it's,
yeah.
I mean.
Okay.
It's the only thing.
But, you know, like that, you've illustrated children's books for the, like, where she grew up north. There's a Native reservation there, and she's helped do books, like, illustrate books in their language. We made that board game.
Yeah.
A few years ago.
Yeah, we made a board game.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, Elizabeth knits socks. that we've sold at our merch table. Just like, because she doesn't have her license, I drive everywhere, so she just kind of knits a lot of the time in the car. Like, I mean, I think you've really taught me that we should just keep making stuff and keep looking forward to the next project and keep doing stuff. And it was actually 2 years ago this month that we released 10. And it was kind of like we were releasing it, and I didn't think, especially after having three kind of piano slam rock albums, releasing an album of soft songs, I found very artistically,
challenging.
Challenging, but also rewarding. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty sure that, those who liked our band might be involved, or like interested, rather than just, a fourth album of the same thing like we did before. Mm-hmm. And, so we were just, thinking of like, what else can we do to not only keep other people interested, but ourselves interested? Because, at this level, we're having four albums, we've only been together 6 or 7 years, but that's like veterans for, what small bands are even together after 3 years? What I mean? There's just a high turnover rate.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just like making stuff.
So what do you got? Is there something else that you've always wanted to do, like a dream project or some other new thing that you're going to create, a new direction to take the band? What's next for Pocket Vinyl?
Well, I feel like my thing that I've always wanted to do was the webcomic. So I just started that like a few months ago.
I think in May. Yeah,
that's my big project right now that I'm just like really excited and really happy about. And then
it's also, if I can interrupt you, it's awesome, by the way. Yeah. It's once a week. I'm really not involved other than like I sort of am a character. I just want to stress out, it's fantastic.
Oh,
it's
cool.
It's not like, it's kind of like Sunday comics where it's like each, comic is its own little thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really good. Honestly, if you check out one thing from this podcast, go check out the Turk Death. It's really fantastic.
Oh, we'll absolutely have some links on the Facebook page for that.
And then you have a new album.
Yeah, well, we have a new album.
Right, but like, I mean, you're the songwriter.
Yeah, we in.
But it's another concept album, and this one is, that two albums ago it was a non-depressing album about death. This one is a non-sexual album about sex.
Okay.
Sex and gender roles and like just all-encompassing like sexuality, and I think that's really fascinating. And I think it's probably brought on because of just touring and meeting all kinds of people. Which is really cool, and just like,
you're
a straight white male, but like getting to see all these different perspectives that are not yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, to me, like with the death thing and the soft songs, like it made me uncomfortable to, because like the death thing is just, death. But I was like, oh, what if we could make songs, like not really glorifying it, but almost like academically exploring it. And then the soft songs was like, I felt like our whole band was all like these loud piano rock
especially
songs.
If we're playing in like a bar where we have to compete with the TVs that are on or whatever, playing a soft album is not easy.
Yeah,
but if you really dedicate yourself to it, you can still get people to pay attention.
I was gonna ask, do you typically play like these kind of like art spaces, or are you playing a lot of
bars? We play everything. We play bars, we play DIY spaces, we play people's homes.
We played a Hot Topic once.
We played festivals.
We played barns.
Any place that will allow us to come. And we played like in the middle of a metal show, where it's like metal band, us, metal band. It worked out. It was fine, we found that we can actually kind of fit ourselves into all these different kinds of places, which opens a lot of doors for us. Which
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we really lucked out because it's the two of us, we're sort of acoustic, like our live, our albums all have full bands, but like, just acoustic, but because I scream and stuff, we can also like be with the harder bands. Mm-hmm. But like, we accidentally just kind of came into this nice little thing.
Oh, cool. So do you guys have, where do you give like your own studio? Do you record at home? What do you do for the music?
No, I find that frustrating. I know people who like get all their own equipment and like set up mics and stuff. I just don't have the patience for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm far more interested in just like actual songwriting and stuff.
Yeah,
and so
you don't
want to
learn
go. I have had the first two Pocket Vine albums were done with some friends of mine who I grew up with. And then, kind of the last few, we kind of like, we'll jump in this studio here and this one here and then get mixed by this person and that person. And right now we're the new album, which, we don't know what it'll be titled, but sometime in January or February it'll probably be released. The sex album. Right. And that's we're just finishing up that album with a guy who is like, he has a recording studio in his home. Mm-hmm. Who I just through a friend of a friend. He had good rates, and I was like, all right.
He's awesome, too. He's
such a fun guy. His name is Nate. He lives near Hartford. He's I don't know.
We just met him through this job, but I think we're friends with him now, and it's nice to see that kind of relationship happen.
He's the kind of guy who, like 5 minutes after I first met him, we were, having, philosophical discussions. To which we clicked really well, and so... And I think that, I don't know, maybe it's just my thing. I hope that reflects a little bit in the record, at least that, kind of companionship and the fun.
Yeah. You always want to work with people that you get along with.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it makes a big difference.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have nothing to add to that. Yeah. Sorry, I said
it's a truism. It can be nice not having your own studio, because when you have your own equipment and you have infinite time, you can just end up tinkering until
you ruin it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. And I've been kind of in both positions, and I kind of do like having a budget and a timeline set instead of just freewheeling it. Because, the Lady or the Tiger album we've been working on has been 2.5 years.
Yeah. Around there.
Yeah, 2.5. Five songs, is it now?
Mm-hmm.
It was six, then it became five.
Yeah, somewhere around
it'll
there.
Probably become
I lost
three.
Count, to be honest with you. I'm not even sure what's on it anymore.
We started
recording another one in the middle of it, actually.
We're now working on our new material while the first thing gets mixed. Just because, for me, it's like the first thing took so long that it's like, well, if this is going to take 2.5 years, we're starting the next project now.
Yeah. Which
our first album, we kind of, long story short, basically, it sort of took 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
But then we released it right as this band started. It was kind of, it's a long story, but that kind of took 4 years. And then the next album we recorded in 2 weeks. And then this one we've been working on since December, just on and off weekends here and there. And even that feels like forever. But
where did the name Pocket Vinyl come from? I gotta know what that is. Or Ryan, would you like to fabricate an origin or come up with a guess?
Oh yes, please.
Oh yeah, please do.
Oh my God, you're putting me on the spot here.
Yeah, we're Pocket Vinyl. Yeah, no.
Pocket Vinyl.
Don't think about it. Just what comes to your mind?
A tiny little record in my pocket.
That's what comes to my mind.
Okay.
It's probably gonna break in my pocket because I'm clumsy and I fall over. I imagine a tiny little record player that it plays on.
Uh-huh.
It's also about the size of a matchbook probably.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's very tiny.
Do you think
tiny.
We came to that because very we thought thing. It was cool? Do you think we thought it was uncool and we're trying to be all meta? Or do you think
maybe you thought it was cool and then it was so cool that it wasn't cool, but then that became cool again?
Oh yeah, it transcended. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, that's what I'm gonna go with.
We did stop at Third Man Records down in Nashville, and they had on display a tiny little record.
It was
record
3-inch
record. Actually plays and stuff.
Oh, cool.
Pretty cool. I don't know when they're.
I feel like that was the picture I got in my head.
did they call it that? Did they call it a pocket vinyl, or was that the direct inspiration for it? Or you already had the name?
We'd already been pocket vinyl for a few years by that point.
Yeah.
They stole pocket vinyl from them.
Right.
These
guys came up with it first, and everyone's like, pocket vinyl, 3-inch records. Yes.
I don't even know how they made them. I've actually sort of looked into it to try to see if. I mean, I think they're the only people who's ever made them. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Jack White.
We actually did see Postcard Records recently.
Yeah.
I want to get some of those.
Yeah.
They're actual postcards.
You write on one
side. Made out of plastic, and they have grooves in them where you can put them onto record player and play them.
Oh, neat.
It's a flexi disc.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. That does sound
awesome. How do you record to those though?
It's
you just send it away.
Someone else worries about it.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, so. I think I might try to write some song as it like a song that's I miss you. That's the sentiment.
Oh, a letter. There could be a letter.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun.
That would be fun.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Cool. Done.
Dear Mom, Idaho's swell.
Ultimately, Pocket Vinyl came because really we thought it looked good on paper.
Mm-hmm. We need a name real quick. Before the first tour, we'd already started booking the first tour, we found that a band out of Boston had the same name as us.
Which was
The Series.
Oh, okay.
And so we needed to get rid of it and come up with something unique in less than a week. Mm-hmm. So we came up with some words that look good together.
Yeah, and they sound good together, yeah, too. Yeah. Pocket Vinyl. Yeah. Rolls off
really,
the tongue.
I'm happy that people seem to think it's a good band name, because initially, yeah, it was like, oh, crap. Like, there's another band. We found them. They're like some pop punk band out of Massachusetts.
They already had stickers printed, and we didn't have any merch yet. And we're like, ah, they already have stuff.
Yeah, we're like, we could start a fight, but why?
Yeah.
And it would just be confusion, especially if we're dealing with a lot of the same venues and stuff.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I remember just sitting down and being like, what words do I just find handsome, like that look good on paper? Because I heard that the Pixies, that's why they're called the Pixies. They, like, people made fun of them when they were first named, because it's like, oh, little Pixies.
It's fake.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like just all fantasy or whatever. And I think Frank Black, the lead singer of the Pixies, was just like, I just thought it looked like a cool word on mm-hmm. paper. And so I was like, I just thought that would be a good way to come up with a band name.
Yeah.
So I thought Vinyl, like with its capital V and the Y at the end, you know, just something about it mm-hmm. looked handsome. And so then I think I like emailed Elizabeth and like a few other friends. And I forget what some of the other ones were, but like just putting words with vinyl. And one of them was Pocket Vinyl, or maybe it even was the Pocket Vinyls.
Ugh,
oh,
that sounds horrible. Like Pocket Vinyls, okay. Like the Pocket Vinyls sounds like whoop.
Sometimes people do call us Mr. and Mrs. Pocket Vinyl. Just like, the Pocket Vinyls.
But and we just decided on it. So.
And you guys, I noticed on your Bandcamp page, you do have like a lot of, or at least I saw a deluxe series of records available in this sort of like deluxe variations of vinyl, where you have like, what was it, like peppermint swirl? They were very sumptuous sounding descriptions. Like, I wanted to eat these records.
We're record collectors.
Yeah, and vinyl.
Yeah, I like deluxe editions. I just think it's fun. It's just
it
fun.
Is.
Yeah. Like,
if you can choose to have a fun life or just a plain life,
choose the fun
not?
Life. Choose the peppermint swirl, aqua, ambrosia.
My favorite Elizabeth did, we released a 7-inch of all tiny 1-minute songs.
Oh.
Also, it's like 11, kind of like old punk bands used to do.
Yeah.
Like 11 1-minute songs. And we called it the world's first MP for mini play. And it was just this little thing. And Elizabeth was like, decided she sewed a whole bunch of, we made 30, I think,
right?
Of like little pockets. Like, it looked like the back of a, you know, five sides.
Pocket. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And she sewed those together.
And then we screen printed the album art onto the fabric of the pocket.
Oh, cool.
And then I think it was a little button.
Yeah, you worked on really hard on those. She knows how to sew, too. There's another thing, a long list of things Elizabeth knows how to do. And it was just these little, like, things. We made, like, 30 of them and, sold them for, I don't know how much, but it was, like, that was the deluxe edition of the 7-inch. Mm-hmm. It was just fun. I don't know.
It's a little something extra for the fans too. They can kind of get involved and you know make
it
a little bit different.
It's more interesting than a jewel case or a screen printed CD. It's something made by hand. It's something original. It's something depending on the different fabrics you use. It's kind of one of a kind.
Yeah,
and that's so much like your paintings too. And that's, I think, one thing that we've tried to do is just to. Yeah, just fun. That's what we think. Like, whenever we're coming out with anything, would you agree? It's just like, would this be fun?
Uh-huh. Would I enjoy it if another band did this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good standard.
Exactly. I feel like more bands should do that. I can't stress that enough. Because it's like, I think like, okay, to me, Radiohead is like my favorite band.
Yeah.
And I think like, what would I want Radiohead to do? Mm-hmm. Would I want Radiohead to release two of their songs all in chiptune music on a 7-inch record? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds like fun. So that's what we did. We did that with two of our songs. And, would I want Radiohead to, release an album all about sex? Yeah, sure. So I'm going to do that.
So fun.
Yeah, so much fun. Talking about sexual baggage and insecurities. Yeah.
Yep.
It'd be a great time.
Elizabeth, is that you singing on Tin?
Probably not.
Okay, there's a female voice on there. I wasn't sure.
No, you do.
One song.
Yeah, you do Ooze.
Okay. Yeah, no, mostly it's my sister-in-law.
Oh, okay.
Well, on that album, it's my sister-in-law. On our new album, it's a friend of ours. We've had a lot of really talented friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling him, like, these women with, like, these angelic, beautiful voices. I'm like, everyone's going to think it's me, and I feel a little bit bad. I do not sing that well.
Everyone does.
I definitely thought it was you.
Yeah.
Tamika is our sister-in-law, and she's just has a great, grew up, like, gospel singing.
Oh, wow.
And she is just a great.
So great.
Yeah, but, so many people are like, Elizabeth, you should sing live. And we're like, that's not her. And I always feel a little bad for Tamika, because. It says so on the album I think so, in the credits somewhere. Yeah, but somewhere.
Right, no, in the fine print.
Yeah.
People don't read those anymore. That's truly a lost art.
Yeah, but it's you are featured on every album, though. Well, except for first, I don't think. Because that was...
I do all the art for everything.
Elizabeth always does something, whether it's like a spoken word thing or on Tin, on the second track, Crest. She does some like ooze in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't know. We always want Elizabeth to be in the album in some small way.
Sure, yeah, be part of that audio experience as well as the visual experience when you guys play live. So on tour, who's the curmudgeon and who is the happy-go-lucky person? Do you guys have roles?
We constantly swap roles.
Yeah.
Constantly. If one of us is feeling down or depressed or grumpy or whatever, the other person always steps up.
Oh, that's cool.
It's not
on purpose.
Great. It just happens that way.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, we really keep each other going. And I wouldn't say, I would guess I'm the more pessimistic when it comes to when it comes to something that we're looking forward to, where like Eric will be like, oh, this is the thing that's gonna make us huge, and I'm like the one who's like, no, let's be realistic.
Tamp it down.
But besides that, I think because we both have anxiety problems, and when you're just putting your life out there on the road, I mean, everything could go wrong.
Yeah.
So it really helps that at all times one of us is always trying to build the other one up. Constantly.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the road makes you crazy, or do you think it's the other way around? You're crazy, and that's why you go on the road.
I think the road makes you crazy. I think what makes you crazier,
we're kind of crazy to begin with, though.
I think what makes you crazy, like crazier, is not being able to be creative.
Yeah.
So, do I want to go on the road where it drives me crazy, but I'm able to be creative, or do I want to stay home and not be creative, and that drives me crazy? So
right.
It's like, what, yeah. I mean, like we said earlier, what do you want to sacrifice?
Yeah, yeah, it's all about, yeah, what you want to sacrifice.
All I had in my wallet was $20 in Krispy Kreme cash.
How much did you like it, Ryan?
I give it 6 breakfast Doritos delivered by someone who just had sex.
I give it 1 sound guy whose tongue has never known the sweet, haunting taste of crack.
I'm going to give it 3.5 pristine bags of pizza combos discovered under the glove box.
I give it 2 devil horns up, no thumbs.
I'm going to give it 4.5 hot dancing girls playing a tambourine. Well,
I give it 3 hot dancing girls who have serendipitously decided to use your stage as the appropriate setting to indulge their exhibitionist impulses.